As a corporate marketer, I'm sure you're curious what other corporate marketers think about agency relationships, how to do them best, and when and how to hire an agency. In this episode, I'm joined by Drew McClellan of Agency Management Institute, where he shares his inside information and some research he's done to fill you in on what your peers are doing when it comes to hiring, working with, and even firing their agencies. I hope you'll tune in. This is going to be a great episode.
Welcome to On Top of PR with Jason Mudd, presented by ReviewMaxer.
Welcome to the show, everybody. I'm Jason Mudd with Axia Public Relations, and you are joining On Top of PR. Today, we are joined by Drew McClellan of Agency Management Institute, someone who has been a big friend to my agency, Axia Public Relations, for years now, somebody who I really look up to and really get a lot of good information from, and you are going to enjoy your time with Drew today also. Drew, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I'm glad to be here too. I know our audience is really going to enjoy our conversation today. Drew, normally you are talking to agency owners and helping them run a better agency. I have definitely turned the tables on you today as we are talking to mostly an audience of corporate marketers who are often hiring and firing and working with PR agencies, advertising agencies, marketing firms. And so I thought it'd be interesting to kind of get your perspective on, you know, good, bad, and ugly client and agency relationships. Yep. What your research you do annually in the marketplace tells us about those relationships and kind of some of the pain points maybe you're hearing from agencies so that ultimately we can improve those relationships and make them more productive and profitable for everybody involved. Does that sound good to you?
Sounds good. And, you know, remember, I wear two hats. So most of my time is spent at Agency Management Institute, but I still own and run my own agency. We're 25 years old this year in 2020. So certainly have been on both sides of this conversation for many years.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Congratulations on 25 years. Whatever you're doing works because you seem to do it all seamlessly, Drew. So keep up the good work there.
What do they say about the duck looking calm above the water and then the frantic paddling underneath? And that's probably more accurate.
But that's a great illustration for sure. Yeah. And real quick, I just want to also shout out that I think you are at your very best right now, as you and I just talked about. We're recording this kind of as there's some return to normalcy after the COVID-19 pandemic and economic response. But I'll tell you, I feel like you've been at it 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, helping agencies, and I just appreciate all that you've done in the last several weeks and maybe even a couple months at this point.
Thank you. It's been a challenging time for everybody, and certainly our position was it's our job to get the agencies we serve through this as seamlessly and smoothly as possible, and that has certainly required a lot of long nights and weekend work, but it's been gratifying because the agencies we serve are doing well, so it's paid off. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. Well, let's get right into it. So, our listener, our viewer at home, Drew, is probably going to be working in a corporate marketing department, probably the leader of that corporate marketing department. And as I just listened to your podcast yesterday, it sounds like a lot of times these folks are managing multiple agencies as opposed to having an exclusive relationship. Do you see that more being agency relationships based on discipline like PR, digital, web, paid media, or do you see it more as relationships based on unique engagements, like special project needs, Drew?
Yeah, you know, most large clients today will report. So we've been doing research, talking to CMOs, business owners, anybody who buys agency services for the last 6 or 7 years. And one thing that we've seen as a consistent trend for all of that time is that most clients have more than one agency relationship. And typically what they're doing is they're hiring agencies for their subject matter expertise. So they're going to have a PR firm, but they might also have an SEO firm, or they might have a web dev shop, might have a lead gen agency. But one of the things we've seen in the last couple of years is the fatigue factor. So CMOs are starting to say, you know what, managing these 6 or 7 or 8 or 2 or whatever it is, relationships takes a lot of work and coordination. And so I'm not really sure I'm getting as much benefit as I am putting into all of these relationships. So what we're seeing is a consolidation. They're typically not consolidating down to one, but they are consolidating down to a smaller number.
Okay. Interesting. And when you say big clients, how do you define, give us some parameters in your mind, what you perceive to be, or how your research shows what's a big client, big company, and maybe work down the scale a little bit just to help our audience understand.
Yeah. So for somebody who's got a budget of, let's call it, $10,000 a month, so $120,000 a year, they typically are going to work with one agency. They don't have the bandwidth and they don't have the budget to spread it out over multiple agencies.
Sure.
If somebody's, I would say, over $150,000 or $200,000 a year, then they're beginning probably to work with a couple agencies or three. And when you get, to the $500,000 mark or more in spending, they're typically juggling three or four agencies.
Yeah. And of course, that would be what you would define as AGI, I assume, where it's the true spend with the agency, not just the out-of-pocket costs for media and materials.
No, in this case, it's this is their self-defined budget. So from their perspective, from the client's perspective, from your viewers and listeners' perspective, this is their all-in budget. So AGI is sort of an agency-centric term.
Right, absolutely.
Right, yep. So no, this would be their total spend.
Okay, yeah. Okay. Yeah. And so when did you start to see the trend maybe of, in my career, I saw where it was all about integrated marketing, and then it went to specialized disciplines, then it went back to integrated marketing. And then I sense in the marketplace that we're currently in a time where it is unique to the specialization and discipline that they're currently at. Do you feel the same way?
Well, it's interesting because specialization goes a couple different ways, of course. One of the things we know is that clients prefer to work with an agency that has a depth of expertise in their vertical or industry or in their audience. So if I'm a pharma company that sells to 55-year-old women, I want to work with an agency that understands the mindset of 55-plus women, right? Or if I'm in ag, I want an ag agency. So that's one kind of specialization we've seen.
But agriculture.
To your point, the other thing we're seeing is as marketing, so you and I have been doing this for a while, and marketing used to be a lot simpler. The channels were fewer. It was just easier to know what to do because we didn't have as many options. And so I think as options have multiplied, so has the expectation or the belief anyway. One of the things that we see in our research is that most clients do not believe that an agency can be a full service integrated agency anymore. They find it hard to imagine that anybody can be good at everything.
Right.
And so I think that's what's driving the desire to cherry pick agencies based on where their expertise really lies and really counting on them to be super good at Amazon Marketplace or whatever it is. There are so many specialties now within agencies that clients can cherry pick. The problem is that for many clients, what's missing in the I'm going to choose this agency and that agency and that agency is that unless the person who's making that buying decision has been around the block for a while and really does have a deep background in marketing, nobody's quarterbacking the whole game and making sure that everybody's efforts are moving the ball in the same direction. And so I think that's one of the reasons why agencies have shifted to choosing a lead agency who drives the strategy and then may do some of the execution as well. And then a lot of times that lead agency is the one who's sourcing the specialty agencies underneath them because this is a group of agencies that have worked well together before. They play nice in the sandbox and it takes away a lot of the hassle for the client.
Well, I got a couple of thoughts there. One is obviously that's where clients are leaning on us to be good at playing well in the sandbox. And as soon as we're not, You know, just like in school, if there's two of you and somebody's misbehaving, one probably has to go, or one gets penalized, or you both get penalized. And so, right. You know, I've certainly been involved in an environment like that where it's like, hey, we got to get along or else the client will move along, you know, to somebody else who will.
Yeah, absolutely. And, that's one of their biggest complaints is that okay. When agencies sort of try and throw each other under the bus or steal each other's work or bad mouth each other behind their backs, clients don't have time for that. Yeah. Like that's like junior high behavior. And they're just like, I'm over this. Just be professional, stay in your lane and help me accomplish my goals. And the agency that does that best is the agency that sticks around the longest.
Right. That's good. And then the other thing that was very interesting to me watching or listening to your research episode that I mentioned to you earlier, which was very good, was this idea, and I kind of did a double take as well, but it really resonated with me that your research shows that a lot of the money that's being spent on agencies and marketing decisions is being made by folks who are, you know, maybe under 40 years old now. And at first that gave me pause, but then as I thought about it and looked at the landscape, I think that's absolutely right. So talk a little bit about that and maybe give me at the end, give us some perspective on why you think that's where we are today.
Yeah. You know, it's funny when I saw that too, I sort of did a double take and then I was like, well, that's my age bias, right? Mm-hmm. I've been doing this a long time. I'm assuming that everybody who is in a leadership role is my contemporary age-wise. But the reality is, you know, for a long time, I was younger than all of our clients. And then I kind of got to be the same age. Mm-hmm. And now, in a lot of cases, I'm mentoring mm-hmm. our clients. So on the agency side, when I put on my agency owner hat, I'm mentoring clients who are 10 or 15 or 20 years younger than I am because they've earned their way up to those positions. So sure. I think for many agency owners and professionals who have been doing this for a long time, it's sort of like when you look at your kid and you're like, I don't understand how you could be driving, right? or I don't understand how you can be getting married. Like how is that possible? Yeah, right. I think we do the same thing to our clients. And the reality is that, you know, They were always people under 40 managing those kind of budgets. It was just, we were used to be under 42, right?
Well, and I've heard you say that, you know, marketing is kind of a young person's business. So you either get energized by surrounding yourself with younger professionals, or maybe it burns you out and you start to transition into a different role.
Yeah. You know, and I think that's more true today than ever before, because marketing, again, when I started in my career, it was pretty simple. It was outdoor radio, television, and print. And print was newspapers and a couple magazines, right?
Right.
And I don't mean to sound like I'm a caveman, but you know, today it's even more exhausting because if you're not learning something new every day, you get left behind in a hurry. Mm-hmm. So if you are somebody who is north of 40, who thrives on learning new things, challenging yourself, continuing to grow and learn, you're sort of that lifelong learner that everybody wants to hire, then you know what? You can stay energized in this business until you're, you know, in your 70s. I have agency owners that I work with that are super energized, super knowledgeable, very kind of into current, you know, they're talking about AI and all kinds of technology because that's how they're wired.
Right.
But I think if you're not wired that way on the client side or the agency side, mm-hmm. it can be exhausting in a hurry.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I completely agree. And I see that in, you know, my experience also. Drew, I don't know if you recall, but you were able to put in your research kind of clients in three categories. And if I can catch you off the cuff on that, I'd like to kind of explain to our audience who would be those three types of people, kind of that different profile. And so they can kind of self-identify which one they think they're in.
Well, actually, every year, so the research that we do is called segmentation research. And so what we do is we ask a series of questions and people, based on their responses, sort of fall into buckets. And sometimes it's three buckets or four buckets or five buckets. So depending on the research study that you're looking at, that we have people in these different buckets. So you're talking about the research that we did most recently, which is why do clients bring work in-house, right? Yeah. So,
or why do they hire agencies? I think the report was titled.
Right, which was triggered by the reality that a lot of agencies were noticing that more and more work that used to be given to agencies was being brought in-house. So the question, the basic premise of the research was, what makes a client decide to farm work out versus to do it in-house? Like what triggers that buying decision to give it to an agency? And it was interesting because for some, so the three groups were, one of the groups was, these are typically younger CMOs or decision makers who had a staff underneath them, but quite honestly, wasn't all that impressed with their staff. Their staff was too slow. Their staff had insider thinking. They couldn't really think out of the box. And this marketer needed to get a lot of stuff done. And couldn't really count on their agents or on their in-house team to get it done. Right. So they were going to an agency really to just crank out work. And one of the interesting things about their attitude was, you know, marketing is not rocket science. So I don't need to have a big discussion with my agency about strategy or whatever. I just want to place the order and get it done. Right. Okay. That was one group.
Okay.
The other group was, a marketer who really had their act together. They had a good internal team. They were doing good work, but this marketer had very specific needs, which required an outside expertise. So they would look at their own staff first and go, you know what? I don't have someone with this depth of experience, let's say in SEO. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to go out and hire that. So these were people who were cherry picking partners to fill in gaps that they had on their internal team. And really this was just, I want to place the order, fill the order, right?
Right.
And then the third group was a group that really wanted somebody to help them think strategically about the business and what really wanted them to sit more at the strategy table than the other two groups of prospects or clients.
Right.
They appreciated the agency's ability to have a different perspective on the work, on the client, on the communications. And they really did want a more of what agencies want, which is that sort of partner relationship. They really did want somebody that they could sit at the C-suite table and have discussions and help make decisions.
Right.
So, you know, in some cases, people really just wanted extra hands.
Mm-hmm.
In other cases, which was that first group. The second group was, I want specific skills that I don't have in-house. So I'm going to be really like razor thin slicing the work and just hand out what I can't get done in-house.
Right.
But my team is awesome. And then the third one is a group of people who wanted a more traditional, what we think of as a traditional, more full service agency relationship,
right,
where the thinking and the doing go hand in hand.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Let's go through the process, and I think we'll have to do this quickly, but let's say I'm a corporate marketer and I'm starting to think about bringing an agency on, and maybe I've never used an agency or we haven't used an agency here. So kind of walk through, if you would, what should be my thought process if I'm going to begin to start thinking about an agency relationship? What should I do first? And then we'll go kind of through the whole process if we can, Drew.
Yeah, I think it starts with, you know, I'm thinking about all the places where an agency client relationships gets derailed, either in the romancing section of the relationship or the once we've already gotten married section.
Right.
And a lot of it, not unlike any other relationship, a lot of it is around candor in communication. So I think it starts with me, the client, thinking, why do I think I need and want an agency? So do I want a thinking partner? Do I want somebody who is sitting at the strategy table with me? Do I really just want an extra set of hands? Like really defining the value you want the agency to bring and being really clear about that as you start to reach out to agencies. It's okay to say, you know what? I'm sure you're great strategic thinkers, but I don't need that. Here's what I need.
Right.
Agencies would love for prospects to just be honest about what they need. And the other thing is realistically, how much money do I have to spend? and being very upfront about that. Look, yeah. You know, I've got in my budget for 2021, I've got $200,000. That's all I've got. And here's how I've got to divide that money up. Again, the more the agency actually knows, the more a good agency can help you get the most out of your time and money that you're buying. So I think it starts with knowing what you want. Then I think the next step is sort of defining what you want that relationship to look like. Do I want to talk to them every week? Does it matter if they're in the same town? Am I going to do all of it by Zoom anyway because I'm on the road all the time? Like, what are my must-haves in terms mm-hmm. of the agency? Do I want somebody who understands my industry or my audience or whatever? Like, what, put together the wish list and then, you know, go shopping. And I think one of the big things is, you know, don't be shy about asking hard questions. Mm-hmm. Don't be shy about asking for case studies or examples. But really it is about, I mean, at the end of the day, when you hire an agency, you put your job at risk, right? Because if the agency doesn't do their job, right. you might lose your job.
Yeah.
So there is nothing wrong with making a very thoughtful decision because the stakes are high.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, I typically the way this works is you would identify a subset of agencies, 5 or 10 or whatever. And then again, depending on if you're doing this all yourself, if you're using a search consultant, whatever, but you would then reach out to those, let's say 8 agencies, and you would have a series of questions that you want them to ask or to answer. And so, you know, in our world, we call that an RFP or an RFI, a request for information, right. or a request for a proposal. You'd gather up that information. That information would then lead you to sort of probably rank those agencies based on their answers. Mm-hmm. You might drop a few of them off. So now let's say you're down to 5.
Yeah.
You might have a phone call or 2 with each of them kind of to do a long distance chemistry check, verify yeah. some of the answers, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Then in most cases, you're going to get down to 3. You're going to want to meet them in person. And honestly, by the time you're down to 3, the reality is if you've done your homework, if you've checked their case studies, if you've talked to some of their clients, odds are any of the 3 can do the work that you need them to do. But the final question, and actually I believe the most important part of whether or not this is going to work is the chemistry test, right?
Yeah.
So by being in a room with them, by having lunch with them, by chatting with them for a couple hours, you're going to get a vibe from one of them that is different than the others. These are people that you have to rely on, you have to trust, but you're also going to spend a ton of time with them. Mm-hmm. So you want to like them, you want to trust them, you want to feel good about being with them. And then, you know what, I would give them a test project and see how that goes. And if it goes well, then I think you can move into a full engagement.
Yeah. Yeah, I like all that. I agree with all that. I personally would probably start with maybe window shopping and then kind of narrowing it down to 3 before I would do the RFQ. But that would just be me and, you know, how I did things when I was client side for a long time, you know, and kind of going through that process. But I think the other mistake that clients sometimes make when picking an agency, just like we might make or they might make in hiring somebody, is they're like, well, Bob's no longer with us. And the things I didn't like about Bob were this, this, and this. So I got to get that fixed.
Right.
And then you focus on the fix versus right. the holistic need. And you kind of go down the wrong path there. But other than that, so you've hired the agency, Drew. What do you do to make sure that relationship gets off to the right start?
Well, I think it comes down to How do we talk to each other? How often do we talk to each other? And do we only talk about the work? I think one of the mistakes clients make is once they've hired an agency, they only talk functionally about the work. They don't step back and talk strategy. Even if the agency isn't developing the strategy, right. they sure need to understand it, right?
Right.
So I think stepping back and talking about the strategy, but also stepping back probably quarterly and talking about the relationship. How is this working? How is our communication? Am I available to you in the ways that you need me to be? One of the biggest frustrations on the agency side is that clients ask for all this stuff and then they're impossible to track down. They don't turn work around in a hurry. They don't give you their feedback. And then the agency is really held accountable to what now has become an unrealistic deadline. So I think having dialogue about like, how are we working together and what's working and what's not,
right,
and really creating a safe place for everybody to be honest is what comes after, you know, you say, I do.
Yeah, that's really good. And I hear that from my team also. You know, the client has these high expectations of a timeline, but we're still at, you know, phase one of the three-phase program because we've received zero input, zero approval. And, you know, and different agencies have different challenges there. Like in our space, you know, do we just go ahead and distribute that content even though it's not fully approved? And, you know, some clients just say, yeah, just do it. Where other clients, you know, are probably, you know, spit their coffee out when I just said that, right? So it just depends on the culture. And the other thing is, I think when you're hiring agencies to produce a lot of content, you don't think about the idea that someone's got to review and approve all that content.
Right, right. And again, that's partially on the agency, right? So in the onboarding conversation, the agency should also be saying to the client, now remember, we can absolutely produce all of this stuff, but who on your end is going to fact check it, verify it, approve it? What approval process do we need to go through in normal times, in crisis times? Like, these are all conversations that you should be having on the front end. And you should use your agency to help you define what is reasonable, right? Like, how quickly can, like, when you think about all the work you do with all your other clients, how quickly do they turn around a media release, a newsletter, a white paper, a whatever, and be realistic about what you can do?
Yeah. Absolutely, for sure. Yeah. Now, Drew, I'm sure our viewers would be very interested, I think, in seeing kind of your annual research that you do, and what their, you know, kind of their peer attitudes are towards agencies and things like that. Are there other resources you might point our audience to that would be helpful that they could either find from your website or in your resources or just recommendations that you could think of?
Yeah, so certainly the research, the executive summaries for every research project we've done are on the AMI website, and those are free to download, so you're welcome to grab those. We certainly have some webinars and things like that that are also free to watch that would be valuable. Right now, depending on when someone's listening to this, if they're listening to this in real time versus, you know, 2 years from now, we have a ton of COVID specific, like, how do you know when it's time to go back and market? What happens if I don't market during a recession? Things that are very client centric on our website. We have a COVID resource page that has a ton of data.
Very
that,
thorough.
Yep. That your clients, that client side folks would appreciate. So that's probably the first place. And, you know, for some who are really want to know what it's like to be on the agency side or understand agencies, there are probably some podcast episodes that would be valuable for them to listen to.
Yeah. So give us the URL for both your organization's website that they can check out. And then also, you know, mention, plug your podcast, because I'm a big fan.
So if you go to agencymanagementinstitute.com, that's sort of the hub of everything. And there's a resources tab, which is where you'll find the research. And then there's a main navigation tab that says podcast. So if you go there, there's a list, an archive of, we're at about 250 episodes now. And you can just scroll through and look at the topics and cherry pick the ones that would be valuable to you. So, and then the COVID page is just agencymanagementinstitute.com/COVID. So pretty simple.
Cool. Well, we are running out of time, but I would love to have you just maybe give us a quick summary. If I'm that corporate marketer, if I'm that CMO, and I am asking myself, should we be marketing in a recession? Can you give us a quick answer? I know that's not really fair, but tell me what your thoughts would be.
Yeah, the data is really overwhelming. For every recession that we have ever gone through, the brands that market through the recession, and absolutely, do you have to change the conversation? Do you have to change the messaging? For sure. But every brand that stayed present and visible during the recession gained market share during and after that recession. And in many cases, their competitors went out of business. So there is no question that all of us should be out there talking to our customers, reassuring our customers, our prospects, helping them figure out how to navigate through the recession. In this case, you know, topped off by a pandemic. But we should be out there and we should be talking. We just have to talk with sensitivity.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good, Drew. And you're reminding me that that resource is available and something I think that all of our audience should definitely check out, whether they're on the agency side or the client side, to prepare themselves. Because, you know, the recovery, whenever it starts, if it hasn't already started, is going to take time. Yep. And you know, and these are questions that we can expect to be asked from our leadership team. And the folks that we're accountable to. And so to have that informed information and independent research we can cite versus our gut or what is perceived to be beneficial to us is certainly a good way to arm yourself. So,
yeah, there was a ton of research projects done around this question. And so a lot of that data is on the site.
Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Drew, thanks for joining us today. I really appreciate it. And like I said before we recorded, it's an honor to be interviewing you since I'm usually listening to your podcast. And so the tables have turned, my friend, and it's always a pleasure to see you. I look forward to seeing you at your next workshop and the upcoming conference.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me on the show. I appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you, Drew. Have a great day. And so that wraps up our episode for today. I want to thank Drew McClellan from Agency Management Institute for joining us. And if this was helpful to you in any way, I hope you will share this episode with a colleague or leave us a review on whatever channel it is you listen to our podcast or our vodcast.
This has been On Top of PR with Jason Mudd, presented by Review Maxer.